Hello and welcome. I'm Megan Crabtree, and one of my favorite times of the day is when I'm getting ready and can throw on a true crime case without distraction. Every week, we dive into a new case while you grab your makeup, sip your coffee, and get ready with murder. Today's case is about the man who vanished into thin air, Brian Schaefer. This is one of those true crime cases that's Googled on repeat with people just asking, was Brian Schaefer ever found? How does a man walk into a bar and just never come out? How does he just go missing without a trace? That is definitely the question in the mysterious disappearance of Brian Schaefer. Brian Schaefer was born on February 25th, 1979 to Randy and Renee Schaefer in Pickerington, Ohio. Brian had one brother, Derek, and growing up in a suburb near Columbus, Ohio, they lived a pretty normal life. He graduated from high school in 1997 and he went on to study medicine at Ohio State University for his undergrad in microbiology. And then he planned to pursue medical school following in the footsteps of his mother, who had worked a career in nursing. He actually also really loved music, and he had always joked around with his family and friends that he was going to start a band one day. He even had the Pearl Jam logo tattooed on his upper arm. Growing up, Brian was incredibly close to his mother. Tragically, though, Renee would pass away from cancer in March of 2006. The death of his mother really rocked Brian's world. According to his friends, he was handling the loss of his mother as best as expected, but he was definitely experiencing some depression. He was quoted to have told his girlfriend, Alexis Wagner, "You should just find someone else and move on." And I mean, I feel so much for him. He was under a lot of pressure with school, and then he lost his mom. The Christmas prior to Renee's passing, she had gifted him a spring break trip to Miami, in which he was planning on attending with his girlfriend, Alexis. This trip would have been really important to Brian, as it was one of the very last things that his mother ever gave to him. The trip was planned for April of 2006, just after Brian and Alexis were due to finish their finals at school. And unfortunately, though, Alexis would anxiously await the morning of their flight, hoping that her boyfriend would show up for the trip, only to come to the realization that the weekend prior, something absolutely terrible must have taken place. On the night of Friday, March 31st, 2006, Brian would close out the school term for spring break and celebrate with his father, Randy, out at a steak dinner with plans to meet up later with his friend, William Clint Florence, and bar hop for the evening. Randy noted that his son seemed pretty tired. It was clear that Brian had been pulling all-nighters throughout the week to cram for exams, and while Randy was mildly concerned, he didn't want to stop Brian from enjoying his night, so he just kept those concerns to himself. He would leave dinner with his father and call his girlfriend Alexis, who went home to visit her family in Toledo before they were to leave on their Miami trip that Monday, April 3rd. The conversation with his girlfriend would be totally normal, and he would let her know his plans for the night to go out with his buddy Clint. So let's fast forward to the following day. After not hearing from her boyfriend since the night prior, a panicked Alexis would call Brian's father, Randy, explaining that she had been trying to reach Brian and was getting really worried as he wasn't answering his phone and she could not get a hold of him. Randy, knowing that this was not like Brian, would immediately jump into action searching for his son. When calls to him would go unanswered from his phone, Randy also called his younger son, Derek, and asked him to go to his brother's apartment and see if he was there or if anything seemed to be out of place at all. So Derek followed his father's instructions and he went to Brian's apartment and he found everything to be normal. In fact, when he first entered the apartment, the lights were on and he kind of breathed a little sigh of relief, thinking that Brian had just returned to his apartment and this was all going to be a big misunderstanding. But the further he made way into the building, it wasn't Brian that was in there. It was actually his girlfriend, Alexis, doing the same exact thing that Brian was doing, trying to figure out exactly what happened to Brian and where he could possibly be. There was no sign of anything that would cause alarm besides the actual absence of Brian himself. Randy at this point knows that he has to call the police. While he's waiting for them to arrive, Derek cannot stop thinking that this is just not like Brian at all, to go silent and not tell anyone what he was doing. Besides the recent death of his mother, Brian was living a normal, happy life. While he and Alexis had only been dating for a few months, friends and family would say that he was really serious about her, and there was discussion of him proposing, possibly even on the Miami spring break trip that they were supposed to go on. And I mean, this makes sense because I don't know about you, but I've had major events in my life that just really put things into perspective for me. I feel like his mom passing probably made him really think long term and what he wants and what's important to him. So it really wouldn't be surprising if he was going to propose to Alexis on that trip. And I mean, sure, school is hard. He was in medical school after all, but he was passionate about it and he wanted to make a difference in the medical field. There was just nothing at all in his life pointing to him directly wanting to disappear. So Brian would officially be reported as a missing person that Sunday, April 2nd, just one day before he was supposed to leave for his Miami trip with his girlfriend. Alexis would continue to hold out hope that her boyfriend was just possibly taking the weekend to get his head together after a long semester at school and missing his mother. She was hoping that despite what seemed to be obvious, that something horrible had happened, that instead he would show up for their flight. Everything would be okay. So she held out hope until that Monday morning when they were supposed to leave. Unfortunately, Alexis waited for Brian. He would never arrive and their flight would take off without them. The reality of what was really happening set in not only for Alexis, but Brian's friends and family. Brian was truly missing. So what exactly happened that Friday night after Brian left dinner with his father that would lead him to never being seen or heard from again? As I mentioned before, Brian finished up his steak dinner with his father and went to meet his friend Clint for a night of celebratory bar hopping. Around 9 p.m., Brian and Clint began their evening jumping from bar to bar and, according to Clint, taking a shot or two at each location. Now, it's not totally confirmed how much Brian had to drink, but just to guess, I mean, I think they visited like 6 to 7 bars before they ended up at their final location, so even if he just took one shot at each bar, that's a lot to drink. So he was probably feeling it. Around 10 p.m., Brian would call Alexis and they would chat for a bit about their upcoming trip and her visit to her parents in Toledo. He would tell her that he would talk to her tomorrow, and unfortunately, that would actually be the last time that Alexis would ever hear from her boyfriend. After midnight, Brian and Clint met up with a friend of Clint's named Meredith Reed. She gave them a ride over to the Ugly Tuna Saluna, which is just quite the name for a bar, where they planned to enjoy one last round for the night. When they arrive, Brian would end up separating from Clint and Meredith. He told them that he was going to go talk to the band. And if you remember, he's really fond of bands. He likes music. He wanted to start a band of his own. And I imagine he really enjoyed chatting with local bands and bars like this. And he was also seen chatting with a couple of girls that were in the bar and being a little flirtatious. So there's that. Take that what you will. It's now getting pretty late and the bar would be closing at 2 a.m. As Clint and Meredith hear the closing time call, they begin to look for Brian. Brian had obviously been drinking that evening. As I said before, they had been bar hopping and every stop that they made, they were taking a shot or two. So Brian's probably pretty far gone at this point in regards to being sober. Brian's friends were ready to call it a night, with the bar getting ready to close their doors for the evening and patrons shuffling through the exit. So they begin searching for their friend. They check the bathrooms, which were located very close to the entrance of the bar. So they definitely didn't somehow miss him in the quest for searching for him. They looked around, they checked where the band was and the girls that they had seen him talking to prior. And there was just absolutely no sign of him. At this point, they call him on repeat. And again, they get nowhere. He does not answer. It's important to note that the bar was actually in the shape of basically a square, and you would absolutely be able to look around the entire bar, no matter where you were standing, and see if your friend was there or not. The friends decide to go ahead and head home after searching for Brian with no success. They figured maybe Brian just left. Maybe he walked back to his apartment, which was nearby, and just didn't tell them. He only lived a few blocks away from the bar, and it really wasn't unrealistic that he may have just left, walked it off, went to go home to sleep it off, you know? Only that wouldn't be what actually happened. The question is, though, what actually did happen to Brian? Where did he go that night? Once Brian had been officially reported as a missing person, police really wasted no time jumping into action. They began their search for Brian at his last known location, which was the Ugly Tuna Saloon. Again, that name is just chef's kiss. Police began the tedious task of combing through all of the bar's security footage. I also want to mention that the bar was incredibly cooperative with the investigation, and there was zero sign of foul play in the bar. So to better help you understand the layout of this location, because it's really important to this case, the Ugly Tuna was actually a bar within a building. Think of it like a multi-business type place, and the bar was on the second floor. It was a newer build at the time of Brian's disappearance, so it was just really becoming frequented at the time, and there was a surrounding construction site by the building because businesses were building out locations within that establishment. I'm going to try to give you a visual of the building to help you understand just how mysterious Brian's disappearance really is. There was the main entrance that went into the building, and you would go up an escalator. And once you got up the escalator, you would go to the right where the entrance into the actual bar was located. There was only one way in and one way out of this business for patrons. The escalators that led up to the bar itself, they did have video cameras on them. And law enforcement confirms that there is proof of Brian going into the Ugly Tuna, but there is no proof of him exiting. In fact, law enforcement went so far as to comb through the video footage and confirm every single body that entered the bar and exited that night. The only person that they say was unaccounted for would be Brian. And just to give you an idea of how meticulously police looked through the CCTV, there was an individual that actually went into the bar wearing one outfit. And when he exited, he was wearing an orange sweatshirt. And police actually tracked this guy down to confirm that he was the orange sweatshirt guy. They saw him exit the building but not enter it wearing that outfit. So they really did comb through this video footage. There was a back entrance for the employees and the band, and this back exit did not have a camera directly on it. However, there was a camera that was pointed directly at the hallway that would lead you to the back exit. And there's zero evidence of Brian heading back there. Like, they would have seen him on camera going through that hallway if he went in that direction. There was also a fire exit for the building. Now, most people know that opening a fire exit will sound a big old alarm and it's going to ring out and you can get in major trouble utilizing that exit if there isn't a fire. However, a patron that was kind of a regular, frequent flyer, as you would say, at the Ugly Tuna actually said that it was common knowledge that the door's alarm did not work. And often it would just be propped open or people would kind of peek in and out of it, you know? Plus, if he was as drunk as we're assuming, he probably wasn't hanging out, reading signs, or putting his best decision-making to work. Now, I'm telling you about this exit so you're aware of the different possible ways a person could exit this bar. Recap, we have the main entrance. We have the back service entrance that is for the employees and the band, and we also have the fire exit. Okay, now that we have established the layout of the building and the possible ways that you could exit or enter, let's go ahead and dive into some theories of where Brian could have possibly gone if police never saw him leaving the location from the main entrance. So Brian's last known sighting would be when he went to talk to the band at 1:55 a.m. And remember that the bar closes at 2. A bunch of people are now exiting the bar for closing time. The band was questioned and they have absolutely no recollection of speaking to Brian. Could they have and not remember? Sure. But what is more likely is that Brian probably never made it to the band to speak to them at all. It's important to note that this was in the springtime, and the band that was playing actually had a bunch of their friends come to watch their show that night. Now, everyone that was a patron was supposed to enter and exit the bar by the main entrance and not the back service exit. However, some of the friends of the band that was playing did end up exiting the bar through the service exit that night, along with other patrons that made their way out that exit and employees of the bar. Not supposed to, but I mean, people break rules all the time. I just think it's important so you know that it could have been a possibility for Brian to have slipped out the back exit and left the building in that way. And if you remember, police did claim to have confirmed the entrance and exit of every patron, but I genuinely question that considering how many people exited through the service exit, which had no cameras pointing directly at that exit. They had cameras directed at the hallway toward the exit, but not the actual exit itself. With that being said, there again, no CCTV, nothing that could have proven or disproven Brian exiting there. Investigators did also look at security footage of surrounding businesses. And again, there was absolutely no trace of Brian on any of their cameras. Police investigated every route of foul play that they could think of. They even searched the city's sewer system for Brian. So it really was as if he just vanished into thin air. After investigating the inside and surrounding areas of the Ugly Tuna, investigators would begin theorizing other possibilities. With the recent passing of his mother, police began to speculate if Brian possibly went away somewhere on his own for, you know, some time to clear his head. Or possibly he left and couldn't handle the pain of losing his mother and decided to take his own life. I personally really struggle believing this theory. Brian was really looking forward to the Miami trip he and Alexis were about to go on. The trip itself was the very last gift his mother ever gave him. I cannot even imagine that he would skip out on that. And while the grief of losing his mother was incredibly fresh, there were no major red flags or signs that Brian was or could be suicidal. And now I'm not ignorant to the fact that many people commit suicide and you never saw it coming. So is it a possibility? Absolutely. I just don't think it is a major possibility in Brian's case. So some theorize that he didn't commit suicide. Rather, he left and started a new life somewhere, which this is even just more wild to me. Because someone that wants to leave without a trace just really wouldn't go about it in a way where he is literally surrounded by people, friends, and security cameras. He easily could have decided not to go out that night and just vanish somewhere without the added complications of having to cover up his sudden absence from this bar. You know, it just doesn't make sense. He had a girlfriend that he loved very much. He knew his father and brother were also living this grief of losing his mom. He was succeeding in medical school. It is just really not likely that on the night when he was wasted, he just up and left to start a new life somewhere and throw everything that he had been working for away. And his credit cards, his social security number, all of those things were never utilized again. Like he didn't even take out a bunch of cash prior to this. And I feel like if he was going to leave, he would definitely take some form of money with him. He would have to. It's also important to note that his buddy Clint that he was out with that night, well, they had gotten into an argument of some kind that evening. There isn't really an elaboration on this or what the argument could have been about, but many people believe that Clint could have somehow been involved in Brian's disappearance. And where it gets a little hairy is that police asked for Randy, Clint, and Meredith to take a lie detector test. Randy and Meredith agreed right away. They passed with flying colors, but Clint would not submit to a lie detector test. And I mean, I wouldn't either. Lie detector tests do not hold up in court for a reason, guys. But also, anytime I see that someone won't submit to one, I immediately think that they're sus. Like, it's a double-edged sword, I feel like. Brian's brother Derek would later say, as soon as the detectives started getting involved, that's when Clint pretty much had no contact with anybody. He says, I've always thought he definitely knows something. He just won't come forward with it. And Derek actually does believe that Brian may still be alive somewhere and that Clint had some doing good or bad, in the disappearance of his brother. He thinks that Clint likely knows where Brian may be. And Alexis also believes that Clint knows more than he's admitted to, though she does believe that Brian is not alive. She says, quote, "I can't imagine that he would have just done that." Another really popular online theory is in regard to the fire exit that opened into that construction site. Brian may have opened that fire exit and fallen to his death. Perhaps he fell wrong, he broke his neck, and he immediately passed away. Could he have been accidentally buried by a construction crew there? I personally find this one pretty far-fetched for a few reasons. Yes, I would venture to guess that he likely was very drunk. Drunk enough to mistakenly open a fire exit and even fall into the construction pit and possibly die. However, we have to make some pretty big leaps after that. Let's say he did fall into the construction site and died. A lot of people online believe that he was then covered in concrete and just buried there. Okay, this is just wild for me to follow along with. For that to be true, that would mean that when the construction crew came to work on that Monday, which was the same day that the police began conducting their investigation at the Ugly Tuna, so not a lot of time for a cover-up, that crew would have had to immediately have taken action and buried Brian's body. There are just so many leaps we have to take for this to be true. Let's say it's just one construction guy that finds him and he panics and covers him up. Okay. But really, it would have to have been multiple workers because it's an entire crew that comes. So you're telling me that these innocent workers that just came to a job site that day decided to cover up a death? Because why? They have no reason to. It would be idiotic for them to do something like this and not call the police if they came in and discovered Brian's lifeless body. Like, they had nothing to do with it. It just doesn't make sense. I cannot follow along with this theory. Now, there is the off chance that Brian simply slipped out of this door and exited the bar. However, investigators would say that the terrain of this construction site would be incredibly difficult to navigate in a sober state, let alone while intoxicated. It just really is not likely that Brian exited the Ugly Tuna through this emergency exit. Another online theory is that Brian is in the walls. Yes, that he is inside of the walls. Basically, a lot of people believe that he somehow got into a fight with someone, maybe Clint, and he was murdered and then placed him into the walls. Well, first of all, you would smell him. Like, you would smell him. The only problem with that, too, is investigators did actually look into this, and the walls, they're made of concrete. So that immediately puts this theory out of possibility. Now, could it have been a robbery gone wrong? Brian only lived a few blocks away from the bar. If he somehow did exit the bar and began his way home, perhaps he was met with violence on the way and murdered in an attempted robbery. There was even speculation about the smiley face killer. And his MO was these young college guys. Could it have been the smiley face killer? There was a nearby body of water that detectives did extensively search, and there was no sign of Brian. Honestly, one of the weirdest parts of this case is that there is no evidence. None. Investigators never found a phone. They never found a wallet, a clothing item. It truly is as if Brian just disappeared. So have there been any sightings of him at all? Well, in 2020, there was a homeless man in Tijuana that really resembled Schaefer, and someone took a picture of him, and then that image began to circulate online, and detectives would look into this only to rule it out with AI imaging that this man was not, in fact, Brian. In March of 2021, investigators released an age progression photo showing how Brian would look today as a 42-year-old man. And that actually reignited a lot of the recent interest in Brian's case. Tragically, Brian's father would pass in a freak accident in September of 2008. A windstorm came through their town, and while Randy was out in their yard clearing debris, a branch would fall from a nearby tree and fatally strike him. Following his death, he would have one of those online obituary pages where you can comment your condolences, and there would be a really odd comment that appears. So the comment read, quote, to dad, love Brian. And then it had like a little location attached to it for the US Virgin Islands, which would at the time suggest that Brian did leave and began a new life somewhere else. However, police did follow up on this. And unfortunately, there are just really crappy people on this earth. It was a total hoax. And the origin of the comet was actually in Ohio. Someone with way too much time on their hands that needs to be banned from the internet. Good Lord. Alexis would call Brian's phone every single night after Brian disappeared. Usually it would always go to voicemail, but one night in September following his disappearance, it actually rang three times. Alexis recalled calling it over and over and over again just to hear it ring, even though no one was picking up. It was one of the best sounds that she had ever heard. Police would later say that this was a glitch in the cell provider. But even more peculiar is that Brian's phone would also ping from a tower 14 miles northwest of Columbus. I don't know about this because I'm just really torn. One coincidence of this computer glitch is definitely a possibility, okay? But two, not only did Alexis have the ability to call and it rang, it went through, but his phone would also later ping. I mean, that's way too coincidental. I lean toward the ping being real, but I honestly don't know if we'll ever know that for sure. There are some theories that perhaps Brian had been alive this entire time and he had turned his phone on one last time before he tragically committed suicide. But that is just kind of strange. Like, it's months of just being kind of like on the run and then I'm going to randomly turn my phone on one day. I don't follow that. Alexis showed such grace and impressed everyone that surrounded her as she navigated the grief of never truly knowing what happened to her boyfriend. She decided that if she and Brian weren't going to be able to graduate med school together, that she was going to fight and she was going to do it for the both of them. She said it took about a year and a half before she started feeling like she was a semi-normal person again. Her mother would actually later introduce her to a man named Eric Noss, who was a framing contractor working on their home. Her mom had actually explained everything that Alexis had gone through with the disappearance of Brian, and Eric told her that that would never deter him from pursuing a future with her. He patiently listened to Alexis when she was ready to speak about Brian, and he later says, "I met the right girl, and my life changed in the best possible way," which my heart just totally melted. Like, how precious is this romance? Her and Eric married in 2009, and they have two sons in Toledo, Ohio. And yes, Alexis did graduate from med school and she became an OBGYN. And guys, not to be a total creeper, but I did look up her Facebook and she looks so, so happy. Her family is beautiful and I am just so grateful that she was able to move forward with her life after living through something seriously so terribly tragic. Derek, Brian's brother, is now the only surviving member of his family. In 2016, 10 years after Brian's disappearance, Derek's wife, Morin, said, quote, "We never could have believed that then 10 years later, we still don't know what happened to Brian. It's been so hard watching Derek go through this, but we had to get back to our normal lives." Derek and his wife have a son, and Derek continues to work installing electrical and communication systems for businesses around Central Ohio. He has never given up the search for his brother. The detectives in Brian's case would grow close to it, and the hope of finding him someday still remains in their hearts. Detective John Hurst said, quote, "Is Brian alive? There's a possibility he's alive. But if you look at the probabilities that he isn't alive, those are just as great. Did he take his own life? Most people who commit suicide want to be found. I would say that is probably in the lower category. The answers that everyone wants, everyone needs, I don't know if we will ever have them." Man, guys, what happened to Brian? And where do you lead on theories? Like, what are you leaning toward? I think foul play of some kind. I think Brian either exited through the back exit when everyone was kind of stampeding out at closing time. He was maybe missed on the camera, or he exited out the construction site. And I think he was just met tragically with something. There is also the chance that Clint does know more than he has said. Maybe he was the one that met him with foul play. But then that leaves Meredith. Like, you would think Meredith would have some information too, because she was with them that night. It's just mind-boggling to me that this case has gone on for so long and there is zero, none, no evidence at all. Nothing ever recovered, nothing ever found of Brian's. Something happened to him. Something happened. Will his case ever be solved? Well, guys, that's our case for today. I hope you enjoyed getting ready with me today and that you have the best day ever. Stay aware and stay safe out there. Bye.